This is Mark Strassman, a reporter with Modern Transportation World. We're about to speak to Roger Dames, who's the Deputy Executive Officer of the Los Angeles Metropolitan Transit Authority and the project manager for that organization's Orange Line, now being built in the San Fernando Valley. Welcome to Modern Transportation World.
Thank you.
Why don't you tell us just a little bit about your position there at MTA and what your responsibility is in regard to the Orange Line?
Well, I serve as the project manager within the construction division of the MTA, and my job is to take a project that is initially developed within our planning organization that once it completes an environmental review process and is authorized and funded by our board of directors, to take that project and get it designed and constructed and turned over to our operations department to operate.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the funding. How much is this Orange Line going to cost, and how much of it's been that money's been appropriated, and who exactly is paying for it up front?
Well, the Orange Line actually has two projects combined. One is the basic busway, and that is budgeted at $329.5 million.
Okay.
In addition to that, we have a bike path project that is actually a City of Los Angeles project which is being constructed simultaneously, and we are constructing that using the same contractor, and that is a $10.6 million project.
Okay. Now, the MTA, just tell people who aren't too familiar with it, where it comes from and who belongs to it and what its authority is, the MTA of the Metropolitan Transportation Authority.
Well, the MTA is a government entity authorized under state law that deals with the bulk of the transportation in Los Angeles County. We also act as the recipient and distributor of funds that are generated from dedicated sales tax revenues within Los Angeles County, and the MTA spends some of that itself. It also distribute some of that to other transportation entities within Los Angeles County.
Does MTA encompass participants from other counties than Los Angeles?
No, it doesn't. We work with counterpart agencies such as Orange County Transportation Authority,
right,
and that is often coordinated through what's known as SCAG, the Southern California government organization,
right,
which works as a coordination organization. So even though we coordinate closely with them, we do not have jurisdiction beyond the county line.
Okay, so but you have jurisdiction totally within the county.
That is correct.
So the busway is a county project, and the bike path is a City of Los Angeles project, because this area is totally within the City of Los Angeles as well as in the county.
Yes.
Okay. Who's actually doing the building? What company got the contract to do that?
Well, we have the bulk of it is being done by a joint venture company of Shimick Obayashi.
Okay.
Which Shimick is a San Francisco Bay Area headquartered company, and Obayashi is a Japanese contractor.
And what got them the contract? What do they do better than anybody else for a better price? Low bid. Okay. Is the purpose of this line within the total MTA system? What is that exactly? How is this going to fit in to the existing lines that are already in place?
The Orange Line will connect the northern terminus of the Red Line subway system in North Hollywood,
right,
and head west on former railroad right-of-way and connect to Warner Center on the west end of the San Fernando Valley. So as such, in some respects, it's an extension of the Red Line, but something that can be built for a fraction of the cost.
Right. Talk about that fraction. What's the cost per mile of this busway versus a light rail that fulfills the functions for other parts of the MTA system?
It's about half or maybe a third. Depending on what you do with real estate and whether you grade separate. Now, we are, our Orange Line is approximately 14 miles long, of right. which 13 miles are on dedicated railroad right-of-way that we purchased from Southern Pacific.
Right.
Something we have done for the very long term is we have several bridges that are constructed along the Orange Line, and we have constructed those bridges to be strong enough to carry light rail should sometime in the distant future we wish to convert to light rail.
Okay, what's the trade-off? Why, if you've just said buses are half as expensive as light rail, why weren't the other lines done as buses themselves?
Well, one of the things you have, if you compare to Subway is the most expensive, but it is not at all impacted by traffic on the surface.
Okay.
Light rail on the surface, if it's not fully grade separated, such as the Long Beach Blue Line, cannot go as fast, and you get conflict impacts between traffic, the rail, and you have to, for your train to get past, you have to stop traffic going in the opposite direction. Now, because trains are longer and they take a greater distance to stop, you have to have crossing gates, and you have to have the period of time allotted to where you're blocking traffic coming in the opposite direction to be longer on light rail versus on a bus. And the other thing is buses are less expensive to buy than trains, and you don't have to have as expensive a maintenance facility and the means to get it there. For purposes of the Orange Line, we are going to be taking these buses to one of our existing bus divisions out in Chatsworth, where they'll be operating out of, and we only had to make some minor modifications to that division to be able to maintain these 60-foot-long articulated buses.
Okay, talk a little bit more about the buses. Who's making them, and how new and special are they?
These are being manufactured by what's called NABI, N-A-B-I, North American Bus Industries, that actually some of it's being made in Hungary and the balance being assembled in Alabama. These are 60 feet long, which most of the buses you see out on the street are 40 feet long, which these are 1.5 times the length of our standard buses. And these buses bend in the middle. They actually articulate, so they bend in the middle so they can turn as sharply as a 40-foot bus. What makes these unique is these will be powered by clean-burning compressed natural gas, not diesel fuel. So these are the first compressed natural gas fueled 60-foot-long buses. So they are about the cleanest source of transportation you could get that is other than electric, and they're unique in that regard, and they will also be very quiet.
Okay, and how comfortable are they going to be?
They'll be...
Have you ridden in any prototypes yourself?
Yes, I have. We had one prototype that was delivered to Los Angeles for testing that last October was put on display, and some elected officials got to ride on it, and they found it very comfortable.
Okay. Now, I'd like you to talk a little bit about the construction project process and what obstacles you may have encountered. There was apparently a delay due to the discovery of some contamination within the soil along the path. What was involved with that?
Yes, because this is an old railroad right-of-way, we did end up encountering residual arsenic and some pesticides that were used a long time. Arsenic is part of the wood preservative that was used on old railroad ties.
Right. Is that creosote?
Creosote has some other chemicals in it, but that's one of the components of it. And the a long time ago, the railroad used weed killers
right.
that had high residuals. Nowadays, the types of weed killers that people use degrade over time rapidly.
Right.
Such if you go buy Roundup at your local nursery.
Right.
That will degrade within a year or two. Not so with some of the stuff that was used pre-World War II. And so what we found, we had a few hot spots that were legally classified as hazardous that were dug up and hauled off to a Class 1 landfill. But then we had other areas that, although not legally hazardous, had concentrations of this material that would interfere with the landscaping of the busway. We are putting in a tremendous amount of landscaping along our right-of-way.
Right.
So you'll have in addition to the busway, sort of a landscaped area and surrounding a bike path that runs parallel to the busway. So a lot of what we had to do with soil was to remove soils that were contaminated to a level that would interfere with the growth of our landscaping.
So you're protecting both the bus riders and the vegetation with what you're doing.
That's correct.
And in fact, so these are at least two ways in which you're essentially you're upgrading the environment. This is a pro environmental construction project that's cleaning up existing contamination that wouldn't have even been cleaned up otherwise.
That is correct, because before what you had was an abandoned right-of-way that, quite frankly, was not very attractive looking. And what we'll be doing is providing a means to get some people out of their cars to get a more a better deal than the Ventura Freeway during rush hour traffic.
Right.
And providing a green belt that will improve the both the looks and the of the area and provide a corresponding recreational activity for bicyclists and joggers.
Okay, and in fact, on a more basic level, you're recycling that unused railroad right-of-way that's lain dormant for so long and putting it to more productive use.
Yes.
Okay. Talk about the intersections and how this bus is going to negotiate those in order to speed itself along while not interfering with the cross traffic.
Okay, well, we have all the intersections of the busway with city streets are signalized, and we have in the process in many intersections upgraded the intersections, oftentimes adding additional left turn and right turn lanes. These intersections are all controlled by the City of Los Angeles Department of Transportation, so we work closely with them. One of the things we've done to give the bus an advantage is basically the bus can talk to the traffic signal controller, and so the traffic signal controller can give a certain amount of priority to the bus so that it can hold a green light green a bit longer or turn a red light green earlier to provide a certain amount of preferential treatment to the bus, but not exclusive preferential treatment. So
it's done by a certain amount of a certain algorithm that doesn't do anything sudden for the cross traffic, but essentially negotiates an exception or an advantage to the bus, and then implements that through the local computer network in the signaling system, so that the people in the cross traffic will have plenty of time to do whatever they're going to have to do. Right.
Correct.
Okay. And what do you expect on a good day the transit time from the red line terminus in Universal City out to Woodland Hills will be?
Some on the order of 35 to 40 minutes, and that includes stops. There are 13 stations
right
there, so that includes time to stop at each of those 13 stations and discharge or pick up passengers.
Okay, now who's going to be building those stations, and are they going to be especially nice as well?
Yes, those are all currently under construction by the same joint venture, Shimick Obayashi. If people are interested in seeing one that's further along at Laurel Canyon and Chandler Boulevard, we have the station canopies already erected. There's also on the west end of the valley near Victory and DeSoto. You can see those taking place. In addition, these stations will be very similar to a light rail station.
Right.
In terms of the various amenities, variable message signs, closed circuit television, monitoring, public address system, seating, And the thing that's most important is similar to our rail system, where you have a paid area and unpaid area. So if you're on the platform where you could board a train, or right. in this case a bus,
right.
you are supposed to have a ticket or a monthly pass or a day pass, some type of valid fare media. And then when the vehicle stops, you can enter through any door.
Right.
It's very much unlike the normal local bus you'll see on a city street, where you have to enter only the front door and show your pass to the bus driver or drop your money in the coin box. So this speeds up the boarding process, which means the dwell time, the time that the bus has to be at the stop to pick up or discharge passengers, is cut significantly, because these buses will have three different doors you can enter or exit from.
Okay, say a little bit more about the cost and the payment system. What is the pricing structure for people who want to ride this line on a daily basis, a monthly basis, or however? And how can people buy tickets? Can they do it online? They do it from machines? They do it from teller windows? How does that all work?
The same as anything else in our system. So the basic day fare is $1.25, plus if you wanted to then transfer, say, to the Red Line, 25 cents for a transfer, or you can buy an all-day pass for $3, and then there are a variety of monthly passes with some special deals for seniors and students. I don't have those numbers at my fingertips, but if people were to sign on the website, metro.net, they could get links that would allow them, you know, get the fare information and places where they could buy monthly passes. Ultimately, MTA is going to a universal fare system that will result in the use of electronic media and passes that you can then scan by a ticket validator, and it will know that you're good.
So essentially a smart card or a stored value card.
Yes, and that's something that is going to be rolled in over the next year or so for all of MTA, and you'll probably see that later this year.
Will people be able to buy those online, or how do they connect, how do they transfer their money to you to get the credit in the cards?
I don't have the answer to that right off the bat. I think that's something that
they essentially buy
the marketing department, Jose Ubaldo,
okay.
he could get you an answer to that.
But as to start with, there'd be buying
the intent is to ultimately have ticket vending machines that
right.
will take credit cards and other media at a place where you would board.
Right.
I believe also by mail order using a credit card.
Okay, mail order by credit card, you get a stored value card in the mail, or you could put your credit card in a machine at the station and get another, get a stored value card that would be usable
yes.
for the MTA.
And that's the long-term system will have that. That is not yet operational, but should be within the next year.
So the way it now is, people will give cash to a machine and get a card in the when this line gets started? People will
by the time we open this should be in by Labor Day
right
to have this operational,
so people will then be able to use their credit card, so it'll be essentially cashless.
Yeah, I mean, if they want to use cash, they can use cash
right
other media as well.
Okay, let me ask you whether there are provisions being made that you can talk about to ensure the security of this line. There's going to be lots of people traveling and expensive equipment. What attention has been paid to making sure this is all very secure against people who want to interfere with it?
Well, we have several things, and one is, you know, we contract with the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department to provide security on all of the MTA systems.
Right.
So they, in turn, patrol our system. We also have, at all our stations, closed-circuit television cameras, so people down in our headquarters building in downtown Los Angeles can monitor what's going on at a station, and if there's something suspicious looking, could dispatch law enforcement personnel to that location.
Right.
And then in addition to the obvious people you see in uniform, we do use undercover officers. We also...
Essentially bus marshals. you could probably.
Well, possibly. I mean, I can't tell you too much about, but
no,
we have undercover staff. We also have in-uniform fare inspectors. They are primarily, you know, for purposes of collecting fares. You know, they're not armed law enforcement in that sense, but they do have radios. The buses, you know, all have radios and communication systems, as well as global positioning systems, so we know where every bus is and can track it. So if, for example, somebody were to hijack a bus,
right,
we know where it is.
Okay. Now, what you've just said and what you've said a few other times already, these buses are pretty well wired and connected to networks already, isn't that right?
Yes.
So that they can communicate with the signal lights, so that there's video surveillance that goes back to headquarters, there's all these other communications. Have you considered or will you possibly be implementing wireless Wi-Fi in the stations or even in the buses so that commuters can get some work done while they're traveling?
Right now I'm not aware of any immediate plans in that. It's basically due to funding limitations we have.
Right. Is that something that would be done by MTA or the bus company or the bus construction, the NABI construction company, or both, if, for example, someone contracted to put a Wi-Fi transmitter in the transceiver in the buses and then put stations along the route that would enable the bus to talk to the Internet that way? Would that be up to NABI or MTA, or how would that happen?
Probably MTA would hire, if we were ever to do something like that, hire a specialty contractor to retrofit vehicles to do things of that nature.
Okay. Talk a little bit more about how people pay and where they stand and so on. Essentially, you said there are two zones in each of the stations. One's for people who come in and then they go to a higher level, essentially for they're cleared for boarding. How does that work?
Basically, as you enter a station from outside the station, before you could get to the part of the platform that's the boarding zone, you walk through an initial area that will have both ticket vending machines,
right,
if you wish to buy a ticket, or what we call standalone validators. So if you already have a valid fare media, an electronic card or stored value card, a monthly pass, you can just wave this in front of a standalone validator machine,
right,
that will acknowledge that you've passed there and recognize it as a valid fare media.
And that standalone device is programmed to talk to your stored value card and know whether you've got a card, you're okay for the month or for the day, or essentially it validates and checks your access rights.
Yes, and it also gathers statistics for us,
right,
on, you know, who's boarding where and traffic information, so you know we don't always know, other than by surveying how many people get on where under, you know, our current system, but it will allow us to gather information on that so that as we get better information on exactly where our customers are, it helps us to refine our network of, in the county, of interconnecting buses that may be running north-south and various things. So it provides information that will help us improve our system in the future.
Could you say a little bit more about that in terms of north-south line? This is obviously an east-west line. Are you making any changes, or are changes being made by other transportation organizations to more effectively provide feeder traffic into the Orange Line?
Well, we're also implementing and have implemented on Sepulveda Boulevard and Van Nuys Boulevard north-south what we call rapid bus, which runs on the city street, but has some ability to talk to the traffic signals.
Right.
The problem we have is when you get into rush hour traffic, the bus can get, because it doesn't have a dedicated lane,
right,
can get caught in a traffic jam along with all the cars.
And then all of its power to override lights doesn't make any difference.
Correct. So the, you know, one of the significant advantages of the Orange Line is it's got an exclusive busway,
right,
at least for the 13 miles of it. The last mile in Warner Center goes on city streets,
right,
and so it doesn't get bogged down in traffic jams on the city streets.
So, are you expecting that this will the presence of the Orange Line will increase traffic on the north-south lines, and you're ready to deal with that through your cooperation with these other lines?
Yes. Well, we and this being the San Fernando Valley, it's all MTA territory. So,
right.
As opposed to, you know, in the city of Santa Monica has their own bus lines. The Orange Line is exclusively within the city of Los Angeles, so basically we adjust the other lines, and we also, you know, that's sort of a continual process. We have our bus operation broken into sectors, and there's a sector for the San Fernando Valley that has community meetings to gather feedback, and we try to adjust other lines as within the economic limits we have as to how many buses we can run, how often, because obviously we can't
right.
bus everywhere, to try to serve the most people we can with the funding and vehicles available.
Okay. How many people do you expect this line will carry at it once it's up and running?
We are projecting... Hang on one second.
Okay.
Here. About 20,000 daily boardings, weekday boardings, in our what our design year for 2020.
Right.
So a lot of that, you know, obviously is going to depend on what happens on other transportation routes, and I think it could... depending on what happens on the Ventura Freeway and how bad that gets, it only gets worse. And when Caltrans made some proposals to widen the Ventura Freeway, those have not been favorably received.
Yeah, I attended those meetings. They were not favorably received.
So I think the Ventura Freeway cannot get improved in terms of increased capacity. That will only push more people onto the Orange Line.
Now, do you think, because that, how does that 22,000 daily users compare with the traffic on the 101 there? Is it going to make a noticeable difference? Do you expect to pull a high proportion of those people out of their cars and into the Orange Line?
No, it'd be a fraction, you know, small fraction of what's on the Ventura Freeway, but
right.
it provides options. And particularly if there's somebody that wants to go all the way to downtown Los Angeles during rush hour.
Right.
On the Orange Line and then transferring to the subway.
Right.
So how
do you think that's going to appear? Let's say someone's living out there in near Warner Center and they want to go to downtown. What's the advantage to them of taking the Orange Line and then the Red Line versus taking the 101?
Basically time. I mean, during rush hour,
right.
it's time. And then cost. It's cheaper, much cheaper than driving a car, and particularly if you have to park in downtown Los Angeles.
Right.
But what you find is you have transit dependent that don't have a car, and they end up taking public transit regardless. And then you have people that drive a car for convenience. They can afford it.
Right.
But those people are not as cost sensitive, but if they have a choice between spending an hour and 10 minutes to get downtown on public transportation or 2 hours driving a car, some of those people will be switched over because of the time savings and the fact that instead of the stress of driving the car and bumper-to-bumper traffic, they can be reading the newspaper or doing something else.
And, of course, if the Wi-Fi possibility that we mentioned takes place, they could get an hour's worth of work in.
Quite possible, yes.
Why don't we wrap up by going to... a little more information about the bicycle option here. I didn't know about that. How closely proximate to the bus line is that going to be? People aren't going to be breathing fumes if they ride their bike along the bus expressway? How is that going to work?
Well, there. In general, we have a 100-foot right-of-way.
Right.
There are exceptions, but most of the right-of-way is 100 feet wide. We use 26 feet of that for the busway.
Right.
And then we have a 17-foot wide bikeway and pedestrian path that runs along most of this. There are a few spots on Chandler Boulevard. Our right-of-way is narrower, so in that area the bikeway is actually a painted lane in the street. But most of it, it's right on our right-of-way. You mentioned fumes. We aren't going to have fumes, because remember, this is clean-burning compressed natural gas.
Right, I just wanted you to emphasize that, right.
Diesel or gasoline.
So that means someone can, and will this bicycle path begin at the terminus of the Red Line, or does it go even further than that?
It goes further. The part that we're building as part of this project goes to, starts at our North Hollywood subway station and heads west.
Right.
The city of Los Angeles is also building a bikeway that will head to the east to the Burbank city limits.
Right.
And then within the city of Burbank, the city of Burbank has already built a bike path that will go from their city limits over most of the way to Interstate 5.
Okay.
That's already completed and open. They did a very nice job. That is just a bike path, but they built that on, they actually have licensed the right to put that. It's on old railroad right-of-way that MTA purchased, so in cooperation with the city of Burbank, you know, we're giving them, making that land available to them for that bike path.
How many lanes on the bike path that parallels the Orange Line? It goes in both directions, I assume. Is it separated, or how does that work?
It's a lane in each direction with painted lines.
With painted lines. So you have to watch out for oncoming traffic, at least.
Yes.
So. But in fact, then, someone could bicycle from North Hollywood to Woodland Hills along this line with, as you said, only a little bit of time on Chandler on painted lanes, but the rest of the time essentially on a segregated line that would let them bicycle through a relatively green, if not pasture-like, pretty well-protected route.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Okay. Any other things? What's been your personal experience doing this? Has this been the biggest thing you've done at your work at MTA? And how well is it going? When's it going to be ready, on time, under budget?
Well, I've worked for the MTA and its predecessor since 1989. So I also worked on all sections of the Red Line subway,
right?
Which is also a very interesting project. This is one that's different. It's the first one we have in the Western United States. It recognizes the fiscal restraints we have to see what we can build within available funding. Our target is to open by Labor Day. We did have some schedule impacts. We are now accelerating the contractors, so much of the work is going on a 10-hour day, 6 days per week.
Right.
Is to regain schedule. And, you know, we're in good shape on budget. Our schedule is very tight. But we're targeting to open to the public by Labor Day of this year.
Will people be able to use this to get to LAX from the Valley?
No.
Can they take it to...
You could theoretically... you could... I mean, if you wanted to badly enough, you could do it. But for somebody from the Valley, it would make more sense for them to take the airport flyaway bus,
right,
which goes directly to LAX. You could, if you wanted to take the Orange Line, you take the Orange Line to the Red Line subway downtown, from there to the Blue Line, from the Blue Line transfer to the Green Line, from the Green Line a shuttle bus to the airport. So
better take the flyaway bus.
Basically, you could do it. It wouldn't be very practical.
Okay. Well, this does sound like a very practical upgrade of the transportation system in Los Angeles. I want to thank you for all the work you're doing on it and for talking to us about it. And maybe closer to the you're saying essentially Labor Day is when the opening will take place?
Yes.
Then maybe closer to then we can talk again and build a little bit more public interest and information about it and get people out of their cars and into the Orange Line buses.
I'd be happy to do that.
Thank you very much for your time and for all your effort here.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye.